Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today I want to revisit one of the episodes from way back. It's episode 8 with Dr. Marnie Hill-Fodorero. A lot of podcasts do revisit old episodes, and I wanted to do that because some people new to the podcast might not have heard some of the older ones. This is a great episode due to Dr. Marnie, and I think it's great content, and I hope you enjoy listening to it. Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast. In this episode, we talk to Dr. Marnie Hill-Fodorero about her alienation story, Path to Growth, and her book series, True Deceit, False Love, which addresses domestic violence, narcissistic abuse, parental alienation, and intergenerational family trauma. Dr. Marnie earned her doctorate in education from Northern Illinois University and completed postdoctoral studies at Harvard during a very successful and rewarding 35-year career as a high school special education teacher, with 12 years as a university adjunct graduate school professor. Many alienation cases involve young children, but Dr. Marnie's children were in their 20s when alienation occurred, and we will discuss this. Her books provide a creative response and resources to help understand a variety of challenging family dynamics, including parental alienation. Dr. Marnie gives talks on these topics and has contributed writing pieces to various magazines, as well as co-authoring anthology of books. In January 2022, Dr. Marnie was inducted into the best-selling Authors International Organization. Welcome, Dr. Marnie, to the Fair Parenting Podcast.
Well, thank you, Phil, for having me. I'm so very honored to be here talking about these issues with you.
I'm very interested to speak to you about your work and your experiences. If we start with your own story, could you tell us a bit about how you came to experience alienation?
Well, yes. You know, I was going along living kind of the American dream, just working a full-time job, raising my two children, you know, busy with activities and pursuing my education, that type of thing. And it wasn't until one night that my light bulb really was illuminated, that I was dealing with a very dangerous and a very abusive person. And I know that might be shocking to your audience to think, okay, how could she go along in a marriage for 27 years and then all of a sudden have this revelation? But that happens to a lot of wonderful men, fathers, and a lot of wonderful women, mothers, when they just ignore red flags for so many years, you know, because they're busy and they're taking care of, you know, all things home and family and work. And so it was very clear to me one evening that I knew I needed to escape my marriage. And I kind of went quiet, you know. I knew there was a point of no return. I wasn't going to be able to have a discussion about this. I knew I needed to leave. And I was actually even physically assaulted and threatened, you know, shortly after. But, you know, I just kind of naively thought, all right, you know, his secrets were revealed. You know, our values do not align. I'm into honesty and compassion and fidelity and fiscal responsibility, and he is not into those things. And I kind of naively thought we could just co-parent our two adult children. They're adults at the time. When I chose to divorce my abuser, our children were 23 and 20 years old at the time. Yes. So they were not little kids. But alienation can happen to children of all ages, because the abuser, after they've taken everything from you, they leave you homeless, penniless, without a support system. Many people are left without a job or without, you know, even their health.
Yes.
I was fortunate to have the latter of those two. But somehow he was able to get our adult children to align with him and completely blame me, fear me, hate me, and cut off all communications with me. And it was just shocking because for over two decades, I had a beautiful relationship with both of my children. And I certainly would never say anything to the kids to have them think negatively of their father. You know, I believe that kids need to have both parents in their lives. That is very different than the alienator. The alienator looks at things as, you know, all good, all bad, yes. You know, black and white, and the kids end up thinking that same way. So for people that don't think this can happen to adult children, it can. Just like they compare this kind of thing, the researchers compare parental alienation to like a cult where you can get adults to align with some sort of false narrative based on lies or believable half-truths or whatever. But what I realized, even though it seemed to happen overnight, the alienation, the reality is that the alienation was in the works for many, many, many years, where I was undermined and discounted behind my back. I was put down. I was made to look like I was not the happy, stable, healthy person that I am. And that's what they do. These abusers, whether it's a man or a woman, they will implant false memories and they will get the kids to align with them and completely reject the other parent.
Yes, it sounds like gaslighting, trying to undermine you and undermine your sense of well-being and the perception of your children for you.
Very much so. Gaslighting and isolation, smearing. There's just so many strategies that these people use.
Yes.
And, you know, that's something that I never knew about. And I had to do a lot of research to look into what was this, what is domestic violence? What is narcissistic abuse? What is parental alienation? I didn't even know. But boy, when I started to learn and connect the dots and then in addition, do my own intergenerational family trauma work, you know, look back on my own, you know, upbringing and what made me someone with weak boundaries or someone who was a people pleaser or who would ignore yes. bad behavior for all these years. I had to look at myself and see my role in how this all played out, which is very different than the alienators. They don't look at themselves. They're always pointing the finger at others, blaming others, but they also do not look into themselves and want to change because they don't think anything is wrong with them, where it's the empathetic, loving parent that always is trying to look at what is in the best interest of the kids and you know, what is my role in all of this with the dynamics, you know. So it you know, the researchers, and there are top researchers in parental alienation, like Dr. Amy Baker, Dr. Jennifer Harmon, Dr. Craig Childress. There's a number of other people that, you know, speak on parental alienation. I, you know, just with my books, I'm contributing just a small part to the large amount of research and references and tools and, you know, resources for people to understand this kind of dynamic. But it is child abuse. It's considered child abuse. But even more so, it's considered intimate partner violence.
Yes.
From one spouse against the other spouse. So really, in their efforts to destroy that parent that learned the truth about them or realized that, you know, the values don't align, they want to get out. And of course, these abusers don't want to let you go. They're like predators. They don't want to let their prey go. You know, they will accuse you with projection of cheating, lying, and stealing or harming the children when really they're looking at themselves. This is child abuse to these kids.
So much of what you said resonated with my own story about the gaslighting and not realizing that it was happening to you, or you know, with in my case, I knew that the behaviors I was experiencing were just wrong, but I didn't have the knowledge at that stage to say, hang on, I'm being coercively controlled, I'm being gaslit, and things, you know, I tried to address the behaviors of my abuser as if they were a rational person, and it just doesn't work.
No, you cannot be rational with people that are irrational. You cannot think like a criminal when you are not a criminal.
Yes.
And these people are extremely malevolent. They're evil. They don't believe in the higher good. In fact, they hate their ex more than they love their children. They don't care if they've damaged their children for life, and they have. Alienation, you know, very rarely do you hear a success story that people are reunited and everyone goes on to live a happy life. Yeah. The damage is devastating, and it is long lasting, and it's very detrimental to the children. In fact, in so many cases, you know, there are studies that are showing that there's a generational component to this, so that, you know, you've been alienated from your children. You had to go back and look, maybe even in your own family or extended family, there was some alienation going on, or at least some gaslighting and bad mouthing, or indirect, like under the guise of care. Well, I really care about you, but so I'm going to tell you these bad things, but don't tell anyone else. You know, so they these abusers all kind of follow that same playbook. But yeah, it's a devastating dynamic. And, you know, it's very hard to have reuniting, you know, results as after experiencing this.
And what you said about projection as well is true of my case. The allegations that were made against me were actually behaviours that the abuser was continually engaging in. I just couldn't fathom it at all. Luckily, in court, the truth was established, because, you know, at the end of the day, facts are facts, and the court was did find those facts, but at the time, you just cannot believe the level of projection that's going on. It's
unbelievable. They accuse you. It's like they're looking in a mirror and accusing you of exactly what they're doing. Now, Phil, in your case, if in court, if they were able to take the facts and use that as the judgment, you are one of the fortunate ones, because I will say, what I hear time and time again, and what I have experienced, is that there's very little justice for the honest, loving, you know, victim in this. That so many times the abusers are the ones that are calm, cool, and calculated. They usually are the ones who have already extorted and stolen all sorts of money. So money is not an option, you know, like an obstacle for them. They love the drama and the chaos of the courtroom, but more than that, they love just destroying you. They love they love having you shocked, because they know the truth of what they've done. These people are intentional with their actions. And so you are one of the fortunate ones if, you know, the court could see through the lies and the facts could stand on their own. I have our court system in the United States might be different than the court system in England, but I filed for divorce in 2013. The divorce was granted a couple years later. 15 lawyers or solicitors later that I have had, I'm still in court trying to defend the facts, the truth, and somehow the abusers twist things around and get even your own lawyers to agree with them. It is just mind-boggling. And it's very fitting that my, you know, ex-husband you know, his solicitor or lawyer is a criminal lawyer, because really those kind of minds need to think very similarly.
Yes.
They're not in the best interest of the children. And in my case, you know, the custody or anything besides college funds, you know, the custody and visitation, they weren't even issues in our divorce, because the children were adults at the time. So I used to always think, gosh, I'm so thankful that my children were older when I made this decision. And I guess overall, I am thankful that they were older, because I did, you know, if they were ripped away from me when they were, you know, toddlers or preteens or teenagers, that would have just been extremely devastating for me. And knowing my abuser the way I know my abuser, he would have stopped at nothing to have me put in jail or even murdered. You know, that's the type of individual I'm dealing with, a very dangerous individual who was very, very successful at his smear campaign and in his alienation. You know, it's going on almost a decade without one of my children in my life. And the other one I was close to until his 30s. And, you know, the other parent was going to see him the day after he saw me. And I live far away now. And so there was a lot of effort and travel to try to do this. But, you know, then it was over. You know, even though we were close until he was 30, you know, it's very stressful for these children, because, you know, they want peace. They don't want to deal with all this drama. And it's easier to just go along with the abuser, because they know that the loving parents, you know, love is unconditional, and that they are strong and they are honest, so they will be able to handle it. So they cut off, you know, the loving parent. It's just, it's mind boggling.
Yes. Yes. It's horrendous. I mean, I do think that you hear so many similar stories about alienating parents, and there must be, mental illness that is driving this, or some sort of condition. I mean, I'm not an expert psychiatrist or anything, but I don't know whether they're psychopaths or sociopaths, but they have such similar behaviours that there must surely be a definition for what's going on. But in my case, although the psychologist did the assessment after the court trial, the psychologist made no reference whatsoever to any of the abuse that the court had found. And one of the aspects that the court found was attempting to alienate my child. And the the psychologist made no reference to it.
Right. But you have to realize, Phil, that they're all in this together. It's a very small community.
Yes.
When you're talking about guardian ad litems and psychologists or psychiatrists and the lawyers, solicitors, and the judges, they all kind of are in it for job security for themselves. So it is, that is shocking in itself. You would think how unprofessional for them not to mention something that was even documented in paperwork, but they don't. They lie, and they know that the good, honest parent will fight for justice, which means then they'll put more money into the system and they'll have more jobs. And it's just criminal. It's criminal what they are doing. But yes, when you talk about, you know, that these people have a diagnosis. Yeah. And I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. I'm not here to diagnose or label anyone, but it really appears that the majority of the alienators have some sort of mental illness, as far as narcissistic personality disorder.
Yes.
Definitely what you said with a psychopath and sociopath, because they know what they're doing. They are intentionally harming. It's not just like, oh, it was kind of you know, a mistake. If they set out to use the children as weapons, yes, in their war against their ex, and I think understanding personality disorders of these individuals, even though they're undiagnosed, and like we both said, we're not here to diagnose them, but it's very clear that they all kind of follow the same playbook and they all have so many of the same patterns of behavior.
Yes.
And so we could be talking like we are here across the world and across the globe, yet the stories are remarkably similar. So yes, they are undiagnosed, very mentally ill people. They will accuse you of being mentally ill, though. Yes. And even if you've never had a diagnosis and you've never had been on medication for anything, you know, they will lie and say that you have. Mm. They have no problem lying, and they lie on court documents.
Yes.
They lie on financial figures.
Yes.
Their whole life is a lie. In fact, think about being them. Who would really want to be them? They are juggling all sorts of scenarios and lies. And in my case, my ex was juggling, you know, 50 to 60, you know, passwords on numerous emails and aliases and, you know, just trying to keep track of all the different sources of supply that they have, all the affairs they've had, whatever. It's who would want to be them? They're living a chaotic life that is just very sick. And at some point, you know, their mask slips. At some point, their true colors are revealed, and no one needs to expose them. They expose themselves.
Mm. Yes, I agree. That is one thing that they are so damaged. No, we wouldn't want to swap places with them. What you said about the court setup and experts, I try not to be cynical, and I try to believe in the system, but at the end of my trial, they selected the psychologist, and we put forward a psychologist, and the abuser put forward a psychologist. At that point, the child's solicitor and the court advisor, the child's guardian, both came forward and lobbied quite strongly to have the psychologist that the mother recommended, the abuser. And
of course they did. Yeah, that was all planned, Phil. I mean, that shouldn't surprise you, because really, if you look at these cases, that's how it all plays out like that. They always seem to favor the abuser.
I'm still trying to keep an uncynical view of it.
Want to be hopeful that there's justice and that there's fairness and equity. But you know, I mean, I've been dealing with the courts for a long time now, and I've been communicating with a lot of different people as a result of my book series and bringing awareness on parental alienation. And I have yet to hear someone say that there was actual justice.
Yes, I mean, I'm probably just extremely naive. And what happened in this hearing, the parties that I mentioned, there were three parties lobbying for this psychologist, and you probably won't be surprised to hear that it was a local psychologist that the solicitor knew, and I was proposing a psychologist who was more of a national figure, who possibly they didn't know. Now, what had been found was attempted alienation, and the three parties lobbying for the mother's choice of psychologist, they said to the judge that this psychologist was capable of assessing parental alienation, and the judge took them at the word, and he selected the one that they wanted. Subsequently, in that psychologist's report, alienation is not mentioned a single time. She ignored all the findings of the judge, and she was hostile to me, and not hostile to the abuser, despite a court trial, a 4-day court trial. But anyway,
I am not surprised. I am sorry that you had to experience that, but it is all too commonplace, and they are all working together. It is a business for them. This is not just a public service that they're doing. It's not that they really care about these young children and if they are in a stable environment. I mean, it is just a harsh reality when you realize that, you know, the justice system is not just, that they have their own ulterior motives. They are very money driven and loyalty driven. They already had this planned out, and you happen to be the loser, but you know, that's how it is. The loving targeted parent, you know, is never seems to get the fair shake, and you know, is very misjudged by legal people, you know, people in schools. People realize that your abuser is a very, very calculating, manipulative person, and they are going to try to get whatever they want at all costs. It doesn't matter if lives are lost in this, as long as they could come out the competitive winner and try to discount you with false narrative or omitting the facts. Like in your case, they omitted everything about parental alienation. And because their omission, it favored the alienator. So it is just, I'm so sorry that has happened to you, and it's happened, you know, I mean, I've been dealing with understanding parental alienation for going on a decade now, doing a lot of research on it, doing a lot of reading on different studies and talking with a lot of people. And I have yet to hear where, you know, there was fair and equal justice.
That's really frightening in a way. In some ways I just don't want to believe that the system can be corrupt.
Look at the world. I mean, we are getting, without going into politics, are being exposed to the fact that there are malevolent forces out there. There's evil versus good. There are truth tellers versus liars. And it seems that the liars, the people that are corrupt, that are deceitful, it just seems like they keep on getting the stage. And you know, so many people, you know, like in the global situation with the media, with, you know, it's unbelievable. In fact, I really believe that because what we are seeing on a global scale with all the injustice, which is just shocking to people, like how could our basic rights as humans be taken away? And we're shocked on that. That could at least help the people understand the targeted parent's plight. We've been dealing with this for a long time where now the world is just being exposed to the injustices and everything. And you know, I can't tell you how many times every day it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened again, or this happened and there's no justice. So I think it's a sad reality, and our voices matter. So Phil, you know, your amazing podcast, The Fair Parenting, has these conversations, and I think our voices do matter. I mean, I'm not a super confrontational person, so I'm not getting involved in actively lobbying for this or that. I don't even want to confront my abuser. I would like my abuser to get a life and go away and find some other focus, you know, instead of trying to destroy me, which he continues to do. I mean, I'm back in court. You know, he keeps on trying to take my money and, you know, create chaos. And he wants me emotionally distraught and financially drained, of course. Yes. It's very, very money motivated for them. But actually more than money, it's the power and control that they seek.
Yes.
But, yes. You know, it's, yes, but it's, I think that our voices matter. Like with your podcast, I have written a 5-book series called True Deceit, False Love, where I creatively bring awareness to domestic violence and narcissistic abuse and parental alienation. And so, you know, for the person who's dealing with this, one of the first things you need to do is understand terminology of what we are going through. If we can put a name to something, we can help. It helps us understand it more.
Yes.
And then it also helps us realize that we're not alone, that there are others that are going through this. And so our voices matter because you can hear different perspectives on how other people are coping with this.
Yes.
I chose to cope with my complete loss of everything, including my children, in a variety of ways, you know, definitely taking care of myself, you know, putting up some healthy boundaries, but also, you know, paying more attention to what I put in my body or, you know, getting good sleep or spending time in nature or, you know, in prayer, you know, meditating. Yes. I've done some of these self-care things. I also moved from the Chicago suburbs, which is the middle of the United States, out to the Caribbean. So I moved thousands and thousands of miles away from my abuser, even though the stalking and harassment continues, you know, because of, you know, the internet and just their love affair with the legal system. So it's, you know, it doesn't matter how many miles you move away, you know, you can still be stalked and harassed, but I've also decided to write and to get my thoughts out, you know, like, the first book in the True Deceit, False Love series came about because I was looking up terms. I didn't even know what parental alienation was. You know, I didn't know some of these terms, even gaslighting. I don't think I had a full awareness of that. And the terms that I had to look up grew from like 100 to 1,000 to over 10,000. And that's when I thought, okay, if this is helping me, then I'm going to put this down in a book so that other people can read and connect the dots to their own experiences. And I reached out to the people that were actually virtually mentoring me by their podcasts or their research. And, you know, I got amazing endorsement support for all of my books with just major influencers in the abuse recovery community that saw value in what I was doing. So the other 4 books ended up being poetry using those terms and, you know, just short little snippets to read to understand what those terms are, but give an emotional tie. And it's not autobiographical. I write from a man's point of view, a woman's point of view, an abuser's point of view, you know, a victim, an extended family, that type of thing. Actually, people that experience toxic relationships in the workplace could benefit from my book series because they're very similar, these terms and experiences. So that is what I have done to find healing, is to write about it and to just talk openly about these issues to bring awareness, because, you know, so many people are not aware of what parental alienation is. They might know it a little bit from, you know, what it seems to be, but they don't know the term that goes with it and they don't know the tactics that are used.
Sure. I think that's raising awareness, and that's brilliant because, as you said, and as I've said, we weren't aware of what was being done to us because we didn't have, you know, I think as a society, we need to be more aware of these terms so that we can spot them, not just when it's being done to us, but when it's done to people that we love, you know.
Right. In fact, you know, so many of us go back and after we've experienced this and we have to kind of reevaluate some of our long-term relationships with family members or close friends that we have known even longer than the abuser. And it's a hard reality to realize that maybe some of those people have also been gaslighting and abusing as well. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when people are silent, when they say, oh, I'm just going to be neutral, I'm not going to take a side, their silence speaks volumes, you know, because that is, that's supporting the abuser, you know?
Yes.
So I just posted something on my website. My website is, you know, the name of my first book I wrote. So www.godcametomygaragesale.com. But the enlightened target just wrote something to the effect that, you know, there will be people you know in your life that will watch you bleed, and they are just as dangerous as the people who had the knife in their hand and caused the bleeding.
Yes, yes. Yes, and yeah, there are many of those that I've seen on my journey. And even you find that there are people who really ought to know better. I mean, the abusers are damaged. They I don't think they know any other way to be. But when you see people around them actually joining their cause, now they may have been lied to by the abuser, but for them,
of course, they were lied to. Yeah.
Yes, but it's to have such little insight that they are actually twisted and manipulated by the abuser to then join in with the abuse is that's really frightening to see that happening, because I don't believe that all the people that are helping, in my case, my abuser, I don't believe they're all psychologically damaged, but somehow they've been manipulated.
But you learn about how easily some people can be manipulated, and then you really learn who are true, you know, that have the people that have a true character, you know, if they didn't bother to ask you, you know, what is your take on this? What is your perspective? This is what I'm being told, you know, what is your side of this? Also, they know better. They have seen you with your children, you know, they have seen you maybe for decades with your children. They should know your character, yet they are the ones that are nowhere to be found when you're needing some support. Or just, you know, just a friendly face. They're nowhere to be found because the abuser, I have learned, has been setting up the scenario for this discard, for this, you know, breakdown in the relationship since day one. So they have already talked to your family, to your neighbors, to your coworkers or whatever. And it can be done so manipulative, in a manipulative manner. And they're so believable because they are experts at lying. They live a lie.
Yes.
And they don't, they actually come to almost believe their own lies because they have said these lies over and over and over. And, you know, unfortunately, you realize that your circle is probably going to get smaller and smaller because, you know, you're realizing who are true, honest, authentic people and who are not.
Yes. I mean, it's funny with these abusers, what you've just described takes so much energy. It's all negative energy. It's a huge mass of negative energy, but it's such effort is going into what they do. You just think that with a lot of these people, if they directed it in a positive way, they could achieve almost anything because they've got the skills. They just turn it into a negative, destructive path.
Right. But the big thing to realize here is that we cannot control what other people do, nor should we want to. No. These are sick, sick individuals that are living in their own twisted web of lies and deceit. Yes. You know, just be glad that you are not them, that even though when we escape these people, and in our case, we're talking about malevolent spouses, but if we are escaping a family member or a friend or a coworker that also is extremely abusive, we have done so much for ourselves to remove ourselves from that. And then if we continue to choose to live in light and love, you know, we're not fighting fire with fire. Because that's not how we're wired. We're loving good people. It doesn't even cross our minds to hurt other people. But that's not how everyone else is wired or how they operate. And so that's a rude awakening. And sometimes it takes these significant trauma situations like parental alienation or some of the losses that, you know, you've experienced when you leave a toxic, it's not even just a toxic individual. It's an abusive individual. We can have toxic people in our lives that are not abusive, but what we're talking about here is true abusive people. And, you know, just be glad you're not them and that you're far away. It is so very painful to know that your children are going to continue to be abused as long as that person is, you know, still alive. Even when they are long gone, they've set up the scenario to keep their narrative going.
Yes, yes. And they've left their imprint on the children. And you don't know if that can be unpicked or if there's long-lasting damage there. It's horrendous. I mean, it's one thing to attack an ex or a spouse, an adult, but to do that to a child, it's unforgivable.
It's unforgivable. Yes. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it was generational. I don't know how it started in my case with my abuser. What made them like that?
Even your own upbringing, though, Phil, you know, you might have had a very good upbringing. And so you came to the table thinking that everyone operates in a positive manner in marriages and in relationships, and that, you know, you make a vow to love this person. And you might have even your experience could be like, well, that's not what's happening here. But you came to that relationship with those kind of values, you know, or many people find that there was some alienation in their own families or some abuse that was, or gaslighting or that kind of thing that was going on. Either way, the abuser is definitely someone who has been programmed, you know, by their environment to act this way. Like, they think putting down people and winning and stealing and cheating and weaponizing children, they think this is how you should operate. And for some reason, in their twisted, disturbed minds, that they think this is how I'm supposed to operate at this time. And it's just so sad, the destruction that is done and the healing, you know, takes years, if not a lifetime, to try to realize what you've been through.
God help us all. It's a shame the states and the courts don't help us with these. I mean, there's very little in the way of protection, unfortunately, but hopefully one day things will evolve in the courts and protect both us and the children.
And that's where sometimes, you know, at some point you need to kind of let go of what you can't control, and you need to focus on being the best person and the best parent that you are. Even though my adult children are not in my life, you know, I believe I gave a wonderful foundation for them, you know, even though it's kind of mind blowing. You think, oh gosh, you know, at 20 and 23, they should know better from experience, but you know, That's what alienation is all about. It's not reasonable. It's not. In fact, research shows that even children that have been physically or sexually abused by a parent never cut that parent off. They want the love of that parent. They want them to change. They want, you know, they want it to work out. It's only in parental alienation where the relationship is completely severed. And usually it's that entire side of the family as well.
Yes.
It's not just the one parent, the mom or dad. It's the aunts and uncles and grandparents, even the pets. You know, it's an all or nothing scenario. There are so many. In fact, you know, your listeners could check out Dr. Amy Baker. She has like a list of 17 points that really show alienation. And that, you know, when you start realizing you're experiencing pretty much all of them, then you know you're dealing with alienation full blown. But the only thing we can do is take care of ourselves. And, you know, I have found, like I told you, writing to be healing, but also I've had to sort of let go and believe that the universe has my back, that maybe there's a God out there that will look at the good versus the evil. And you know, maybe the judgment is not for anyone here on earth to do. Maybe the judgment takes place, you know, in another world and another time. But, you know, we can't live life, you know, and we're not wired that way either. We're not wired to think, oh, I want revenge. I want justice. You know, you just want your child to be happy and have both kids in their life, you know, both parents in their lives. You want your ex to just move on and get a life and stop focusing on destroying you, you know, and you want to be able to move on without, you know, yet again, having to go to court and having to deal with all of these things.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you just want peace at the end of the day. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting to say that you say you're not confrontational. I'm not either. I would walk away, but in these situations where there's a child, you can't walk away, and the abusers know that. They know that they've got you and you can't go. And as you say, you even left the country and still goes on.
Yep, it really does. And yes, you know, you do. In fact, the reason why I filed for divorce was this light bulb moment that I had where I knew I was being financially abused. I know he was obsessed with money manipulation, but, you know, one of the unintentional confessions it was a game changer for me was that my ex stole $12,000 from one of our adult child's bank accounts. So actually, went into an adult child's bank account, somehow had his name on everything, and took money. And then, as a parent, when the abuse trickled over to the kids, of course, that's when it really is hard and you take action. And my action was to divorce immediately, to file for divorce, because really then I realized, oh my gosh, there were so many other instances that I just thought things were wrong and I just ignored it. And then it really confirmed a lot of other malevolent actions on so many other levels. So yes, the parent in you, you know, when you know your child is being wronged is you do want to have some justice, but, you know, it's just unfortunate how so many of these cases play out, because the sick, calculating, malevolent people, they actually seem to enjoy all this kind of aggravated chaos, you know, and it brings them some joy. It's really sickening. And where we want peace, and we're, you know, at least at some point, we continue as loving parents to role model for our children. So even though my children are not in my life, I feel I'm still role modeling. I'm speaking the truth. I never lie, almost to a fault, you know. So honesty eventually is exposed. You know, the truth eventually comes out. And you know, if I were to fall apart or if I were to seek revenge, I would be teaching my children, my adult children, that that's how you're supposed to handle challenges, you know, yes. is to get down and dirty at the level of the bad guys, you know?
Yes.
And that's not what I want to teach my adult children. I want to teach them that, you know, they're going to have adversity in their life, whether it's a relationship or a job, you know, something with their housing or a car or, you know, whatever, their health. We're all going to have adversity in our lives, but we can choose how we want to respond to this adversity. And I just choose to respond with honesty, awareness, love, and compassion.
I mean, that's really empowering. I'm not anywhere near where you are with the coping. It sounds like, you know, you've evolved to a situation where you, well, you're just much further along than a lot of, I mean, I talk to other parents and it's just a real struggle to get through the day.
I understand that. And I've been there too. You know, yes. We go through, it's like the death of a living child.
Yes.
So you go through all the same stages of grief. And, yeah. You know, I guess I am at a point of acceptance where mm-hmm. I need to kind of let go and just realize, yeah. Okay, my adult children have their own journey. Would I like to have them back in my life? Yes. But at the same time, even if they were to come back into my life, it would not be super easy because a lot of trust has been, you know, shattered and, you know, a lot of wrongdoing has happened. And, you know, I finally got myself to a place of safety and more security and happiness and peace. And, you know, I'm a different person now in some ways. Some ways I'm exactly the same with my values and you know, my love for my children and that kind of thing. But in other ways, I'm changed after what I went through. No longer will I just take things at face value or just trust that you know, the courts will prevail or that everyone will be honest and play fair. I know better now.
I'm still not there, but I can see the wisdom in what you're saying. I perhaps need to do a bit of evolving myself there, quite a bit, I would say. But it sounds like what, you know, you talked about being an example and that you've learned to let go and you're seeing things in a philosophical way, and you're working on your self-care, and that's all fantastic. That is how it should be. It's just, I think some of us have got to try and get to that stage. And it's fantastic that you have, because you're a strong, together person now, so that when your children come to you, you've got your books that you've done, so that your children can see that, even if they're not with you, they can see your books. And when they come to you, you're a together person, a wise person, and in some ways, well, in some ways, a better person through having gone through adversity, I guess, because you've got the wisdom from it.
Right. I appreciate what you're saying, although I would never wish this, you know, or alienation on anyone.
No.
For me, the writing has really helped me because I've been able to publicly express my values of honesty and goodness in a creative way to help other people. And so that their, you know, heartfelt, you know, notes and words that my children can read at some point.
Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, it might take a real big light bulb moment for them. You know, some of the lies that they've been told will have to be completely exposed. And I believe that the mentally disturbed parent that is engaged in all of this, that they do expose themselves in time. You know, I mean, look at it. It took me 27 years before my light bulb moment. And then it even took longer than that for a light bulb moment to look back at my own, like, father, for example, and how he treated my mother.
Yes.
You know, even though I sort of knew it, but it really took going through this myself, and my children might not have children of their own, and they might be breaking the cycle just by their choice to, you know, not have their own family, and, you know, whatever they decide is what they decide, but then there would be less likelihood that they would have the light bulb moments to realize, you know, what has really taken place. You know, it takes a very strong, inquisitive person to at some point stop and reflect back on what they've been through and really put the pieces of the puzzle together. And so it took me, you know, I'm 61 right now, and it took me into my midlife before I even put the pieces of the puzzle together for my own family of origin. Yes. So it's a process, and the reality is it may not happen in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm. And you, what you said about going back and examining your own childhood, and I think at the start of our conversation, you mentioned boundaries and that you'd learned boundaries in childhood, and that may have contributed to things taking so long for you to realize in your marriage. And sure. And I think that's probably true for me. But I mean, it shows great perspective and wisdom and willingness to examine history for you to actually have gone back and done that work, because you know, a lot of people would bury it or not want to confront it at all. But you've actually done quite a lot of reflection there and have got some, you know, very profound learnings.
Well, I think you have to with any kind of adversity or challenges. I think, you know, it does take a certain maturity level, or it takes a certain kind of timing to be able to go back and really look at your role in things and make some adjustments where needed. Like, I've had to put up some healthier boundaries with not letting people in my life.
Yes.
And some not keeping people in my life, you know, that I've been trauma bonded to. And I think the research is key. And that's where my books come in, as just, you know, one of many resources that are out there to just provide that kind of knowledge and awareness of what you're dealing with. Because, you know, once you realize what you're dealing with, it helps you accept it more or come to terms with it more, you know, or be able to just, you know, cope and be able to have days where you're happy and fulfilling your life purpose and that type of thing, you know, getting back to, you know, reclaiming your own life. Now, I'm in a different stage than a lot of other alienated parents who have minor children that are, you know, still in elementary school or grade school or even high school. Yeah. So I do realize I am at a different phase, but the pain is just the same, you know, if not sure. more, because you know that you know the love and care that you gave to your kids, and to have them, you know, unjustly ripped from your life is just, yeah. You know, it's just mind boggling. You really have to, and at this point with the knowledge of knowing that, you know, there's a chance that I'll never have them in my life again.
Yeah.
Because the alienator is so good at what he does, you know, they're skilled. They're skilled people. They're able to convince even your acquaintances or neighbors or you know, family members. I mean, it's amazing how skilled they are at what they do. But like you said, who in the world would want to have that kind of focus in their life and that kind of energy being spent, when really, like you said, gosh, if they could redirect that to a different cause, they could change the world. But, but that's not, you know, that's, we've got to stop thinking in miracles, you know, that we have to be grounded in reality. And, you know, and these people, they'll just move on once they're done with the next person and the next situation. They'll just move on to another and another and another. They're into scamming. They're into hurting. They're into controlling. Control is, and power is a big part of this. Yes, because they are powerless. They are, you know, that's something to really know about them. These people are pathetic. They are powerless. They are, you know, really very, very immature and insecure people. If you have to be a bully and put someone else down, you can't be reasonable, you know, then you're dealing with really a, you know, an unevolved individual.
Yes. Oh, certainly. Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned it's about control. I mean, it totally is. What more powerful way can you seek that control than to try and take somebody's children from them? It's horrendous. Yeah. It just doesn't get any worse than that. You mentioned earlier some of the ways that you had coped with situations. There's a lot of parents who, and we also talked about how we didn't know what was being done to us originally.
Right.
I mean, for those who are unfortunately perhaps just beginning to be gaslit or just beginning to be alienated and they're starting to think, I think this might be what's going on. Have you got any advice for them in terms of coping or getting educated about the dynamics of parental alienation?
Well, I think one of the things that people do just instinctively is they start researching it. They just type in parental alienation into a search engine and they start watching videos and they start reading books and they start learning about it. And they learn about the terminology because it gives a name to some of these behaviors that they are, you know, experiencing on the other end of their abuser. And so I think the big thing is knowledge is power. Learn about various red flags, you know, and if you can, you know you're going to be leaving, if you can develop an escape plan, you know, where, I mean, in my case, I didn't. I followed my gut feeling and I just filed for divorce right away. And it was unbelievable the efforts that he went to change accounts and steal more money and do this and do that. I mean, it's like, you know, we don't think that way. We like to think people will be fair, but these people, if they're engaged in alienation, and, you know, immoral, unethical behavior, they're not going to all of a sudden start being honest and play fair. So knowledge is power, learning about all of these things, pick up some books to read about this. But I will tell you that, especially if you have younger children and you're going to be eventually going to the courts, you know, you have to act fast on this because the alienation will happen overnight. And even though it's been in the works for a long, long time, once they really have the kids, you know, under their spell, it's very, very hard to get them back. And even if you were to get a court order that says, oh, they'll be equal parenting or whatever, they will sabotage that at every road that they can. You know, I know that there are some apps out there where if you can't communicate with your abuser, that especially with parenting, that you could go through the app as far as schedules and that type of thing. You know, it's, I mean, there's just no perfect answer for this. It's just arming yourself, you know, staying strong, stay healthy, stay objective, try to limit your communication. with the abuser, you know, document, document, document. Although I have found in the court system that they don't care about the facts or the truth or the documentation. In fact, I even at one point I was granted an order of protection against my abuser.
Yeah.
And then I had video evidence that he was in contempt of that, violating that. And I brought that to the courts, and the judge just winked at the lawyer, his lawyer. So he actually winked at him. So they're friends. And the judge, even though I was there with a domestic violence advocate, had absolutely no interest in seeing my videotape that would prove that, that, you know, that there was a reason for me to have the order of protection continued.
Yes.
And then as punishment for me for doing that. Okay. So the order of protection was not granted because the judge, they didn't want to even see the video, the documentation. So my abuser, in order to punish me for that, supported one of our adult children in getting an order of protection against me. And for what? For sending Christmas cards or a birthday card or reaching out and saying, I love you, trying to go to a graduation or give gifts, you know, so, and of course that was granted. So I had a 2-year order of protection against me. That was from one of the adult children, even though this one, I had a perfect relationship. I shouldn't say perfect, very normal range, loving mother child relationship for 20 years. But, you know, definitely was she, this child was taught to hate and was fed a false narrative. And they will be told outlandish things.
Yeah.
Like outlandish, like in my case, you know, I think this adult child, if I remember correctly, said something like, well, Dad told me that you tried to murder me and that you never wanted me. You know, you never wanted to have me as a child and that you've tried to murder me for years. And I'm thinking, what on earth? You know, my actions don't show that. Our photographs don't show that. Our videos don't show that. Our everyday experiences don't show that. But it doesn't matter. That is the brainwashing that happens. So getting back to saying, even though I recommend people to document, it's not always even looked at.
No. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the amount of evidence in my case is so overwhelming. You could sink a ship with it. But I don't think it's all. Well, in fact, I know it's not always read. In fact, I went to one hearing and the judge, even because we use an app to communicate, the abuser and I, that it's visible to the court and various other people in the case. But the judge even sort of joked, oh, I'm not going to read that. But it's the communication, it's important communication between the parents.
But they don't care. They don't care. And when it comes down to it, you know, they're going to, unfortunately, oftentimes favor the abuser because they know it's job security for them because it's a money-making thing. And children are going to get damaged, but they don't care. Obviously, we've seen even on a global scale that, you know, children, our precious, precious children in our world are, you know, are not the subject of care and concern for those that should be.
Yes.
So it's just, it's mind blowing, but you've got to stay the loving parent that you are and, you know, continue to do the right thing and, you know, just hope that goodness will prevail at some point.
Yes. And I think with all parents, the thing is, we get, especially if you're unawares and you're perhaps a little bit naive about things and you want to believe that everything's just and good. But you can get sucked into a realization that is just unsettles you so much that you might not climb out of it again in one piece. And you can really suffer in these situations. And The speed of the courts is another problem, because you can be in this situation for years.
I'm still in court. I filed in 2013.
Yeah.
And then this particular last petition situation, which is, you know, filled with lies and false documents and all of that, which is really getting overlooked. What the gist of the whole thing is it's a continuation of domestic abuse. It's, you know, you would think that, you know, that could be very clear to the court system. Like, why would they still be back in court after all these years? And, but that's gone on for over a year. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and it's just money. And, you know, they want you frazzled. They want you, you know, they want you just to get so exhausted and worn out that you'll just agree to anything, even if it's not in the best interest of the child, or even if it's not fair and it's based on lies, you know.
Mm. In the beginning, I thought the behavior was so bad that I was a victim of. I just thought, well, we're going to get into court and they're going to see this and it's going to be over in 5 minutes. what an idiot, you know. But that's what you kind of believe growing up, that, you know, well, some of us believe. But so I people who are just starting on this thing, I think your message of, or your example of self-care and education and wisdom and creativity, and just being a role model for your children, whether you're seeing them every day or not at all, or some days, I think all of that is fantastic, because it takes away, it removes you from this hope, clinging on to hope that the court will sort things out, or your abuser's going to see sense, or they're going to suddenly turn into a nice person.
Right.
I think you've got to almost look to the future and try and see, or make sure that you in the future are in one piece, because it's no good being a broken person or a homeless person or a damaged, you know, or even a vindictive person. I mean, you and I aren't that, but it could twist some people. It can twist good people into that way.
Sure, we're only human. And this is how I've chosen to deal with it. And like you said, the creativity, finding some passions, because, you know, most likely you're focused on so much of this survival mode situation that you put aside things that bring you joy and happiness, even if it's just taking a simple walk, you know, before work and enjoying something in nature, or maybe it's you know, having a nice meal, or maybe listening to some music that calms you. I mean, in my case, you know, being outdoors really helps a lot, being connected to nature, you know, spending some time in prayer or meditation just to kind of remove my thoughts, to get away from the trauma, that's the fight or flight, the cortisol, you know, that can wreak havoc on our bodies. And then I found writing to just be therapeutic. Not only could I get the truth out, I could provide support to other people, but I'm also showing my children, look at what your mom did. You know, why would your mom go to all the trouble writing a 5-book series about all this if there wasn't some truth to that? So maybe it would spark a little bit of, you know, thought in their mind, you know. But, you know, I can just hope that, you know, I can only control myself and what I do and how I choose to live. And I want to still enjoy life.
Yes.
I am a happy person. I am a loving person, an empathetic person, and I still have a lot of life to live. And even though the abuser wants your life cut short, and, you know, unfortunately, Phil, we read about things in the paper every week about one spouse murdering the other or taking the children out, you know, murdering the children just because they don't want the other parent to have a relationship with them. I mean, these people are sick. They're dangerous. And some of them will go to some very big extremes to make their point, to get that power.
Yes.
And, you know, you can only control what you can control. If you can, if you're at a point where you can fight for your kids, you just fight fair and be honest, you know, even though they're not always honest and fair on the other end. Mm-hmm. You know, you can at least live with yourself knowing that you are an upstanding individual, that that they are not. And, you know, there's nothing you can, there's only so much in our control.
Yes.
There's only so much. And, you know, it would be, you really just need to take care of yourself physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Yeah. I mean, when the thing with a lot of us, for example, I'll use myself, but there are other people I know like this. I mean, you mentioned that one of the side effects of being abused is that you don't do the things that you love so much.
Right.
And that certainly happened to me. What you can get into a situation is, as your child could come along at a certain point in time. For example, my child might reflect on me in you know, a few months' time, and I, you know, if my child's very young, so she wouldn't do this, but if she said, "Dad, what have you done for the last 4 years?" I wouldn't be able to say very much, to be honest, because I've basically been consumed by the work and the trauma of the case.
Right. And that's what they want. That's what your abuser wants.
Yeah.
That's what these courts want.
Yeah.
So now that you're aware of that,
yeah,
start making some subtle changes. Just even if it's 5 minutes here, an hour there, you know, trying to either rekindle some of the things that you were passionate about, that you enjoyed, or develop some new habits and some new projects and interests.
Yeah.
You know, which is fine. Like in my case, you know, I moved to the Caribbean, so I'm thrilled to be able to just swim in the ocean and explore the rainforest and, you know, really have a different life than I had, you know, when I was back in the Chicago suburbs, even though I loved my life there. And my whole plan was to stay there at that house, you know, forever, which I would have been okay with. But that wasn't in the stars for me. That wasn't the plan. So I had to take charge and make some decisions.
Yeah. Well, I'm speaking from England in October. It's cold and dark outside. So what you just described about swimming and rainforests, that sounds a lot better than the dark, cold night I'm looking at outside of my
window. Right, but you have beautiful footpaths in England.
Have,
you know, actually where you're located in England, you know, it's not far to explore some other areas. You can drive a couple hours time and really be in a different environment. You know, I'm on an island now, so I'm not going too far. But I think we can enjoy the beauty of the world wherever we are.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's our mindset. It's what's in our heart and what's in our heads.
Yeah.
And we can control some of the things that we can control and try to start getting back to some creative response, even if it's reading or whatever, because you need to balance out some of the trauma that you're going through.
Yeah, and it's, there's some people say that living well is the best response, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
I think that shows where that, you know, how you've the steps you've taken shows how you've evolved past the stage where a lot of us are in. We're still in the trenches, mentally and physically and emotionally, and maybe some of us will never get out of that. But I think, you know, what you're doing is you are giving an example to many others of what we can hope to get to at some stage.
But actually, just talking about it, Phil, is already turning the corner, because having these candid conversations where they're long and in depth and very thoughtful but very informative, that can help, you know, promote other people to think about, well, maybe I should get out of the trauma a little bit and balance this out a little bit more. And they might not have without hearing your podcast or this conversation.
Yeah. And if I mean, people may think, oh, I don't want to look after myself. I'm putting my kids first. I'm fighting the case. That's all I want to do. I mean, I went through that. But at the end of the day, that's not the way you have to look after yourself first, because I mean, it's like the old analogy with the when you're on a plane and it's about, you know, the oxygen mask come down. They always say, put it on yourself first, not your child, because you need to be well enough to put it on your child. And it's similar here. You've got, when all of us who have alienated children, if those children come to us, we need to be together and calm and in good shape and in one piece. They don't want to see somebody who's, you know, distraught and has got all sorts of problems as an effect of the abuse. It's the children want to see the parent as they remember them, the good parent as they remember them. But also the other people who are going through trauma need to see that, because it's an example. And I think, again, well, I've said it before, I think that the way you've evolved and the fact that you're sharing your story is really an example of shining a light that can help so many of us, because there are so many of us, so many people who are really on the first footsteps of this journey. And hearing stories like yours, I think, you know, it's just so powerful.
Right. And you know, and it is a journey, you know, so I was where you were at. And I think we go through all the different stages in our understanding and evolving when it comes to this.
Yeah.
So, and you did bring up a great point that, you know, we want to be whole for our children. We have to really realize, though, our children are being abused. This is severe, extreme child abuse.
Yes.
And so they, just like we are traumatized and will have to go through various stages of grief and understanding, they are traumatized too. And, you know, it's going to be a long journey for them to get, you know, life will never be the same. I mean, unfortunately, you know, you can't go back and just pretend that this didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough reality, because, you know, you, as a loving parent, the last thing you want to do is see your child abused and not being able to protect them from that.
Yeah.
And you can't, but you can show by example, by how you react or how you don't react, how you respond, and you know, they want peace and they don't want all the drama, because you know the other parent directly or indirectly is on a huge campaign of denigration against you.
Mm.
And it can be very, very indirect. I mean, they could say things like, well, I know your dad really loves you. He's just not capable of, you know, showing you, or he just doesn't have the background to be able to be a good father or something. I mean, they'll make up just such terrible things like that are so untrue. But you know what? You continue to rise above and be the wonderful parent that you are, no matter what. Even though my children are not in my life, I'm continuing to be the wonderful parent that I am and that I know. And, you know, at some point in their awareness, they're going to be able to see the difference between the personality types.
Yes. Yes. I think that's true. And when the abusers often, and I think some of the listeners may identify with this, the abusers, what they try and do, I found in my case, is they continually try to provoke you, and they want you to lose your temper or to, I don't know, throw something or just do something, because then they can point at you and say, look, I told you.
And right. Definitely. They call that baiting. So right. Like, you know, like, and that came from like the fishing where you throw the bait and then the fish catches that. And I was a victim of baiting.
Yeah.
Even with some legal things
yes.
early on, where my first reaction was to defend and jump on that and say, that is so untrue. And this is the fact. And then they get you right where they yes. want you, because these are very sick individuals. So they may not know the term of what they're doing, but they are baiting you to get you to engage in any way. And don't fall for it.
No.
You know, a good practice for people is to not react right away. Take your time and evaluate the situation and sit on it. And there's no reason you need to provide a response immediately.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so many of us do. We're on edge and we want to correct the wrong right away.
Yes.
And sometimes time is one of the best things, is to let some time go between things and so that you can properly respond and not just react.
Yes, and that's not just for in-person interaction where you're being provoked. That as well goes for something like an email, where they're expecting a quick response. They may be firing emails at you, but just as you say, take your time. Just take a day or two if you need to.
Or longer. You know, you don't need to respond just because they want you to respond immediately.
Yeah. And it goes back. Sorry.
I was going to say, you know, sometimes you need to let the situation diffuse a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they are like a predator.
Whew,
yes. They're ready to pounce and you don't have to. Sometimes no action is the best action.
Yes. Yeah. And it goes back to what you were talking about, being an example to your children. If a child sees a parent being provoked, they may be too young to get the understanding of what's happening. They would just see two parents in disagreement. I think it's better to have for one parent to distance themselves. I'm not an expert, maybe that's not right, but in my opinion, I think that's a great opinion. So that they don't see that and you don't get drawn in, because as you say, the abuser is trying to manipulate you into coming down into the gutter where they are, because they can win, and they will use everything you do. They'll prod you and attack you until you react, and then they will use that in court, and they will use it to tell everybody that look, I told you this one example, that means that everything I've said about this person must be true. And so I would just say, don't react, don't get drawn into it. And I hope that may help some people who are just starting along with this.
That is excellent advice, Bill. That is, you said it perfectly. You know, we don't need to get into the gutter with them.
Yeah. Could you tell us a bit about your book series?
True Deceit, False Love.
Yeah.
They can all be found on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. My publisher is Balboa Press, which is a division of Hay House, which has a lot of books on self-help and spirituality.
Is that Louise Hayes?
Yeah. That's my publisher. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, but you know, if money is tight for some people, which it is for a lot of people right now, especially alienated parents that are going through the court system, you can get my books for just, you know, under $4 US for the e-versions, you know, so you don't have to get the physical copies. But I know people are buying them in England, because I've been told that it's at various bookstores or whatever. But the True Deceit, False Love series, there's 5 books. There's going to be a 6th book next year. Mm-hmm. But the first book is 15,000 555 terms and phrases on domestic violence, narcissistic abuse, and parental alienation. Mm-hmm. And then the second book is acrostic poetry, where I take some of these terms and write them vertically, but then add a poem to them. And the third book is a survivor's workbook. So if someone, it's a red book, if someone feels that writing might be helpful to them, they might want to pick up the workbook part of this. I did some free verse poetry. And then actually, my fifth book ends up being a bestseller. It is a word search puzzle book. Mm-hmm. So it, you know, it's talking about these different terms and related terms, but you're doing a kind of relaxing activity with searching for the words. It kind of removes you, it distracts you. And it uses another side of the brain, which is really good. So those are the book series. There are a lot of other people out there. If you go on my website, which is the title of my spiritual fiction, the first book I wrote, God Came to My Garage Sale. If you go there
at the end,
what's that?
Is that .com at the end for your website?
Yes, yes, it's .com. So www.godcametomygaragesale.com.
Okay.
And I have a happening section on the menu tab where I highlight, you know, interviews I've done, speaking engagements, book signings, but I also highlight a lot of other people out there that are doing amazing work. You know, your podcast will be featured on there as well. So you could go there to check out some other names and resources to also check out, you know, not just my books. And, you know, there's a wonderful woman named Sherry McGregor, who has a workbook along with a couple books with Done with the Crying, mm-hmm. about getting to the point where you can kind of stop being so distraught about everything that's happened and try to reclaim your life again. You know, there are various other influencers and psychologists that have endorsed my book. So you could actually just go on my website and look at the endorsement section, the praise section. Yeah. And each one of those individuals would be people to look up themselves on what, you know, what their contribution and information is regarding family dynamics or parental alienation. So that's the book series.
Okay. And one thing I hope for in the future is that parental alienation, maybe, I think it's a long way off, but it may be taught in schools as part of perhaps relationship education.
Wouldn't that be nice? They should just start with teaching the court systems and the lawyers, yes, and the judges about, you know, these mentally ill, malevolent, you know, abusers that, you know, because they're in the court systems a lot. But yes, it would be ideal that when you talk about relationships, that you know, kids of all ages could learn about healthy boundaries and trying to pay attention to some red flags or understanding what parental alienation is in a family dynamic, you know?
Yes.
I think awareness is key. And, you know, we're doing awareness just by our conversation. So,
yes, you know, and I think books are a good, and websites and maybe podcasts. I guess children do listen to podcasts. I'm not sure, but certainly books, textbooks in schools can help. And so I think we may be fairly early on in the educational side of parental alienation. There's a lot of us who are experiencing it and we don't actually know, but there's a lot of children who are perhaps going to experience it in 10 years, but they're going through the school system now. And really, as a society, I think we need to know about parental alienation. And also we need to be able to spot it when it's been done to our friends, so that as a society, we can actually start to, in the way other things are now frowned at, for example, drink driving or, you know, smoking indoors. You know, you wouldn't, if you see a parent smoking in a car with children, that's not acceptable these days. And I think if we can get to the stage where parental alienation and a psychological abuse of partners is just not tolerated in society, then I think that's going to, well, it will just affect so many lives.
Right. And, you know, we're bringing awareness just by having these conversations. You know, years and years ago, I know a Dr. Richard Warshak, who wrote Divorce Poison, you know, he also wrote a children's book, you know, regarding parental alienation years and years ago. And, you know, but now it seems that there's a name for it more and that it is becoming more and more prevalent. And so, yes, awareness needs to be done. You know, where people are talking about this more and understanding, and there needs to be some resources for the younger aged kids.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, the good thing is, as we discussed earlier, we because of social media, we can see it's happening in Australia and France and India and Canada and America and the UK. And that wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So we are massively more aware than we were. And hopefully that this is just going to, you know, we don't want it to take 50 years to for society to address and stop this problem. Hopefully, you know, in this, the way technology moves, it's an exponential thing. And hopefully we can have an exponential progress with tackling parental alienation. But we'll have to see.
Right. Well, and also, you know, Dr. Craig Childress, he actually did a seven or nine video series for the alienated child. However, he is very scientific and psychological in his verbiage. Mm-hmm. And so it's really more for, you know, adult kids to read about. But there are books out there and videos out there that are directed at the child to help them understand, you know, what is going on, but certainly not a lot out there. So I think, you know, we're part of a movement that's just bringing awareness in the best way that we know how. You know, when you type in parental alienation, my books come up all the time now, which is great. In addition to some of the other resources that are out there to give people, you know, some options of things to read about and learn about.
Okay, well, it's been absolutely fantastic talking to you today, Dr. Marnie. I really appreciate you joining us for the podcast. I know you're not on social media, and again, I think that's a sign of evil. as somebody who spends way too much time on Twitter, I wish I could make that's another change that you've managed to do that I need to do. So if anybody wants to find you, they're not going to find you on Twitter or Facebook.
No.
It's really it's that website that you mentioned is God Came to My Garage Sale.
.com. Yep. That's where you can find me and learn about some of the things that I'm doing to bring awareness to this devastating family dynamic. So, great. Phil, it's actually been an absolute honor to be on your podcast. And I love what you are doing with the Fair Parenting, because that's what the loving, empathetic, honest, you know, targeted parents are all about. We are about fair parenting. We are not about deciding that, you know, our children can only love one parent and must hate the other parent. Yes. That's not what we're about. So kudos to you for having a podcast called the Fair Parenting Podcast.
Thanks very much, Dr. Marnie, and hopefully speak to you again soon.
All righty. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.